Socrates, the great Greek philosopher.
My greatest belief, and one that guided me my whole life, was a simple one. If you have a problem and want to find the solution that is right for you, you have to make sure you ask the right questions. I was born in the city of Athens, Greece, in 470 BCE. My father, Sophroniscus, was a stonemason, someone who cut stone for building work, and sculptor, and my mother, Phanarete, was a midwife. As you can imagine, we were not wealthy, and we lived a simple life. I had the most basic education, and then, when I had finished school, my father taught me his trade. I also learned a great deal by watching him as he worked. Being a practical man, my father let his hands, rather than his mouth, do the talking. I trained myself to pay attention to detail, and I tried to be a good apprentice, working hard. Even though I tried, I was not very interested in becoming a stonemason. My real passion was listening to the stories the elders in our village told. Each day, I would hear these wise old men sharing their views with whoever would listen. They talked about what they knew, and their opinions differed depending on how they saw life. They would discuss problems of the present, such as how our way of life could be improved. They would look at examples from the past to help them reach conclusions. The ideas for the future were also considered, for example, whether new laws should be introduced to improve society, and if so, which ones? Apart from practical issues, they also discussed more abstract topics, such as whether truth and certainty actually existed. Each would try to convince the others that their view was the correct one. Those who were respected for their attitude and contributions, for they were not all judged equally, usually had the most success. To me, these debates were at the center of reality. Unlike the lifeless stone and wood that I worked with every day, people were warm and alive and were capable of thought. I believed that it was our duty to share and compare what was in our minds in order to improve and develop as human beings. This, and only this, would lead to happiness and a contented, rich life. I had seen that wealthy people were not necessarily happier than the rest of us. I had noticed that there were times in our lives when difficult decisions have to be made, and we don't know which direction to take to get the best result. Let me explain what I mean. From an early age, I had seen people, my mother is a good example, worry about areas of their lives that they thought were problematic. As with all families, we had plenty of disagreements. My mother found it difficult to keep the peace and be fair at the same time. At times, I am sure that I was responsible for making her upset and angry, but often she didn't ask me why I was behaving badly. Instead, she would decide for herself what was troubling me and would act accordingly. She wasn't always right, and I discovered how important it was to share thoughts and ideas. In 431 BCE, the Peloponnesian War between Athens and Sparta began. I was a soldier at the time, doing my military service. In the heat of battle, there was little time for debate and sharing one's thoughts. Differences were settled by fighting. But having a set of principles did help to guide me. I tried to be brave and fearless. People later told me that I was. I was lucky enough to be able to save the life of an Athenian general called Alcibiades, who was respected and well-liked in Athens. Greek society in the 4th century BCE was divided up into cities, each functioning as a state with its own government and rules. It was normal for them all to be in conflict with each other, but there was an alternative way of dealing with such conflicts, a great competition that we called the Olympic Games. The original Olympics were held in honour of Zeus, who, according to Greek mythology, was one of the 12 gods who lived in the temple of the gods at Mount Olympus. Zeus was the father and king of the gods. In the town of Olympia, a huge, impressive statue of him was built, and Greeks from all over the country came to see it. It was here that the games were first held. All the Greek city-states sent representatives to compete in the games. Everyone taking part had to swear an oath to the king of the gods and had to be able to speak Greek. It was important not only for the athletes to compete in sporting competitions, but also to participate in the many theatre, poetry, sculpture, dance, and singing events that were held. The games were the perfect occasion for everyone to celebrate their culture, their religion, and their artistic talents. In the beginning, the sporting competitions were open to both men and women, with the women taking part in a series of races called the Horaean Games, dedicated to the goddess Hera. Later on, however, women were excluded from competing, and then were not even allowed to enter the stadium. Eventually, this rule was relaxed, and women were permitted to compete in equestrian events, that is, those involving horses. A Spartan princess called Cenisca, driving a four-horse chariot, was the first woman to become an Olympic winner. In contrast, the first male Olympic champion was a man called Corybus, a cook who won the first running event, which covered a distance of 192 metres. For the men, there was a variety of events, all designed to test mental and physical strength as well as endurance. It was a rule that athletes had to train for at least 10 months before the games. Winners did not get medals. Instead, they were given a crown made from leaves, called a laurel wreath. They were also given a branch from an olive tree. As well as becoming a valued sporting event, the ancient Olympic Games became a great social occasion too. People from the city-states who were not athletes would meet to share ideas and do business, and in this way, the Games helped develop Greek culture and way of life. But of course, real life was not just about taking part in sporting and cultural events, nor was it about being polite to each other. Politics, too, had its place, and where there was politics, there was also conflict, caused by various types of bad behaviour. People tried to dominate each other, they tried to cheat each other, and they were jealous, wanting what their neighbours had and they did not. I had become interested in philosophy, and I was wondering about how social conditions could be improved. For example, how could we avoid injustice? I developed a method of investigation, which people later called the Socratic method. It consisted of my asking people, both rich and poor, questions based on political and ethical issues. The topics covered, among other things, courage, love and respect, and the way people saw themselves. I questioned anyone I found out and about in the city streets, and I didn't care whether they were willing or not to talk to me. I must have developed a particular style, because young people would copy the way I talked. From people's answers, I intended to create what I saw as being truths. I would have the evidence I needed to state that I had more than just a theory. I would then use my evidence to try and make a better world and better living conditions. But finding real evidence could be difficult, because people didn't always want to answer my questions. When they did answer, they were often not truthful. I believed that those who were reluctant to give answers were those who had something to hide. I soon discovered that it was the honest people who had no problem with telling the truth. I also believed that for the better world I was looking for to exist, politics had to be conducted in an honest way. That came back to people again. The government worked best when it was ruled by individuals who had the greatest ability and knowledge and possessed a complete understanding of themselves. The only way to achieve this understanding was to ask the right questions and answer them truthfully. When I was 50, after I had spent many years on my work, I met a woman many years younger than me, called Xanthippe, and in 419 BCE, we became husband and wife. We had three children, all boys, and although I would like to say our family life was happy, it was not. Xanthippe always felt that I did not pay enough attention to her and the boys. I am afraid that she may have been right. In 404 BCE, after 25 years of conflict and fighting, Athens had been finally defeated in the last battle of the Peloponnesian War. The city was now going through a period of instability, and its people were feeling insecure. They did not wish to let go of their memories of successful battles, their ideas of wealth, and their obsession with physical beauty. Good looks were seen as being incredibly important for anyone wanting to be successful in the world of politics. For a long time, beauty and the idea of goodness had been linked. If you were not handsome, people thought you could not be a good person either. My own appearance did not help me, as I could not have been described as being good-looking by anyone, probably not even my own mother. Nor was I interested in money and what it could buy. This was probably a good thing, as I was always rather poor. I did not try to look like a successful man by wearing good clothes or by trying to look clean and tidy. I tried to convince society that it was the mind that was of the greatest importance. Unfortunately, many people felt threatened by what was, in their view, an attack on their way of life. I tried to use humour while I was challenging their conventional wisdom, but I was not always very successful, and I managed to upset both politicians and the military. A military government called the 30 Tyrants took control of the city, and they ruled for about a year. During that time, I became even more unpopular with the authorities. On one occasion, a man had been sentenced to death, and I thought the way he had been judged was unfair. I objected, as I was not the kind of man who kept quiet about social injustice. Once again, speaking my mind led to some dangerous situations. However, my message must have had some influence, because in 406 BCE, I was invited to be a member of the Bauli. The Bauli was a council made up of city residents. It dealt with matters such as property disagreements and access to the facilities in the city. For the council to be successful, it had to be fair and make decisions that people could accept, but there were often problems. Other members of society who were not part of the council wanted things to happen their way. They knew that money was a powerful tool, and they used it to get what they wanted. Justice was replaced by corruption, something that I found unacceptable. I protested, with the result that I made more enemies. I had not stopped using my method of asking questions to find solutions, but the questions that I asked those in power gave offence. The truth was often inconvenient, for if they answered truthfully, they would expose themselves as being dishonest or corrupt. Still, I did not give up, and with every question I raised, the political temperature also rose. I have to admit that I quite enjoyed seeing these people arguing. At least they were talking about what was right and wrong. As it turned out, though, they were also talking about me and what was to be done with me. During 399 BCE, a message arrived saying that I was going to be arrested. Friends advised me to escape, but to me that was to admit defeat. I had always thought that running away from a problem was no answer. The right thing to do was to face my accusers. So that's what I did. There were many of them. A jury of 500 Athenian men were gathered to judge me. At that time, religion was a serious thing in Athens. There were many religious festivals that people, by law, had to take part in. The many temples and shrines, the places where people went to pray and worship, were cared for with public money. Showing religious disrespect was a serious crime. My accusers claimed that I did not believe in the Athenian gods, but worshipped gods of my own. They believed that my attitude was dangerous, and that my views were corrupting young people who were also behaving in a disrespectful way. Others accused me of interfering with progress. Few people openly said what really scared them, but I knew what it was. I was the voice of the poor people, the majority of citizens who could not vote and could not be heard. What would happen if I was allowed to become their political champion? Would there be a revolution? Would we win? That was the real fear. Realizing the danger of allowing me to be free, the majority of the powerful 500 had their way, and I was found guilty of being a revolutionary. I was imprisoned. But I was not a murderer or a thief. I was really guilty of two things, neither of which I considered to be a crime. One was searching for truth, and the other was trying to abolish inequality from society. I was sentenced to death by poison, which I drank myself. The end of my life, however, was not the end of the search for justice and truth, and it certainly did not stop my ideas from taking on a life of their own. I like to think that my principles of ethics and morality had considerable influence on the development of scientific thought.